It almost seems sacrilegious on a beautiful morning like today to possibly spoil it for at least a handful, perhaps. I have no idea how many people will find it offensive, disturbing, or whatever to talk about Amchitka. Amchitka? What is Amchitka? I would like my guess, perhaps. Irving, would you? How do you describe Amchitka and what the United States government is planning up there?
Well, in early October of this year, the AEC is going to detonate on the island of Amchitka a nuclear device, which is basically a hydrogen bomb part of their missile weapon system, equivalent to approximately 5 million tons of TNT, which you would describe in scientific shorthand as a 5-megaton blast. This blast will be set off in a hole, which is one of three holes dug by the USA Atomic Energy Commission, at a cost of approximately $600 million. It's 6,000 feet deep, it's 120 inches wide, and the Don't Make a Wave Committee is concerned because it feels that nobody should be testing atomic weapons at all, and it certainly should not be testing atomic weapons on a federal wildlife reserve located just off a major earthquake fault.
Well, speaking of Earth, that was Irving Stone. He's no stranger to open-line listeners, open-line audiences. You mentioned earthquake fault, so to sort of keep us in perspective on this trail, we have with us this morning for a short period of time Dr. Robert Ellis, a seismologist, Dr. UBC. Is that how you describe yourself?
That's right.
And sitting next to him we have Jim Boland, who is going with the Greenpeace ship. And we're going to talk about that between now and 11 o'clock this morning. But Jim is probably perhaps better known, being a research scientist with Canadian Forestry. And Jim, how you must have... Was it a difficult decision to think about joining on the boat?
No, not at all. I am what a lot of people call a preservationist. And my theory and my actions lead to the situation where I believe that in order for a person to be a protester, he must also be an activist. And I believe in nonviolent direct action. And I think one of the most clear-cut things that a person can do is to interpose his body between the person who's or people who are doing us harm or proposing to do us harm, or what we think is harm, and our ideas. My idea basically is to arouse public opinion so that the people of Canada and primarily the people of the United States will either join with us in the protest or exert enough pressure on Washington and on the Atomic Energy Commission so that the whole tail off.
Before I'd like to start with Robert Ellis, Dr. Robert Ellis, if I may, because he may be called away soonest. But I was relating off the air, and I think our audience should know this. On Friday, we visited, had a musical morning with a group called Timber from the United States, and they are five, we had four people in the studio, one of them was ill, but they are five responsible young Americans who are singing about the kinds of things that we talk about, war and peace, ecology, pollution, etc. And I was amazed to discover that only one person, the girl, Judy, with the group, had heard anything about Amchitka. And it emerged after we really talked about it that the United States really doesn't get to hear too much about Amchitka. They don't get to read too much about it. They don't see it at all on television. And it's like some giant conspiracy is afoot down there to make this the most secretive thing in the land. The only way I think that Judy found out was I think she said she read it in an underground newspaper or something. That's how it all came to pass. But Dr. reading up over Amchitka, about Amchitka over the weekend, and I think, I don't know if Irving and Jim can certainly speak for themselves, but people who are concerned about this, it's the unanswered questions. The things that, you know, you're exploding this device, and it seems that with very little regard for so many things, the Americans are just going ahead and doing this thing. And our reason for getting you down here this morning was perhaps to give us to bolster our confidences or something. You know, I think back to the time when we had the tidal wave from the earthquake up there and what it did to the west coast of Vancouver Island and certainly way to the south of us in the United States. And many, many people feel this kind of thing will be triggered again by, if you like, a man-made earthquake. As a seismologist, what do you say?
Well, I think that the only direct danger to British Columbia, to continental North America, is a possibility of a tidal wave. Now, let me say right off the start, I think that this is very remote, this possibility. However, let me just go back a step or two and talk about how this might occur.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the Amchitka region, there are a very large number of earthquakes occur each year. Now, these occur because the Pacific Ocean floor is pressing against the ocean floor to the north of Amchitka. And every once in a while, there's a relative movement between these two, and this is what we call an earthquake. Now, what one is concerned about is that when they set off this 5-megaton blast called Kanakin, is that it might trigger an earthquake. Now, let me say that earthquakes are going to occur at Amchitka, no matter whether you let off blast or not. The only question is, do you trigger larger ones or smaller ones? Smaller ones would be a good way to set it off. In fact, there's even talk about setting off small blasts near the San Andreas Fault to release strain so you don't have another 1906 San Francisco disaster. However, we aren't to this point yet. Our state of knowledge is rather meager in this area. Now, given that you set off this blast in Amchitka, as I said, there's one of two possibilities. You can set off small earthquakes, which you'll almost certainly do, or you can trigger a larger one. At the present time, our evidence is based on two shots in the Amchitka region, plus about 200 at the Nevada test site. Now, at the Nevada test site, so far, all earthquakes have been smaller. Let me emphasize this. Now, when we move to Amchitka, certainly from the two blasts, the earthquakes have been smaller, but we have relatively little experience in this region, and the problem is not direct damage due to earthquakes. There is no possibility in North America or in Japan of damage due to an earthquake-triggered earthquake itself. What one is concerned about is, if we trigger a large earthquake, that this large earthquake might in turn trigger a tsunami or tidal wave. Now, these tsunamis or tidal waves can sweep over the entire ocean. For example, from the 1963 Chilean earthquake, it swept across the Pacific Ocean, hit Hawaii, killing almost 200 people there, it continued on across the ocean, hit Japan. Now, probability of this blast triggering a large earthquake is, I think, rather small, and in turn, I think the possibility of triggering a tsunami is, again, in turn, very small. But if you look at the historical record, you find that tsunamis are triggered in the area of the 1964 Alaskan earthquake, which was near Anchorage, and we are all aware of this from the damage at Alberni.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you move out further on the ocean chain in the Amchitka region, this does not appear to be as dangerous. Now, if we look at this movement of the ocean floor, which I talked about, I think we can see why, because the movement here appears to be relatively horizontal, and how you trigger a tsunami is an uplift or a downdropping of the ocean floor. However, I think that I would describe it, the problem, as something like taking two pieces of wood. We've taken a piece of wood which we now know quite a bit about from the Nevada test site, we've hammered a nail into it, and we get small cracks in it. I'll take this analogy between a crack and an earthquake.
Okay.
Now, we've now moved to Amchitka, a completely different type of wood which we don't know anything about. We've driven a couple nails into this, and we pulled them out, and what we are saying is that if we put in a much larger nail, that this is not going to cause a very large crack, which in turn will not trigger a tsunami. So, my personal feeling is that the possibility of damage due in North America, Japan, Hawaii, due to a tsunami is very remote, but at the same time, the seismologist's experience at this stage of the game is rather limited. Just one additional point is that large earthquakes appear like triggered events. For example, the 1964 Alaskan Good Friday earthquake, which most of us are aware of, appeared as a series of events with the first shock relatively small. That is, the first shock was about the size of the recent Los Angeles earthquake, mm-hmm. and eventually built up into a much larger event, similar to the 1963 Chilean event. So what some seismologists are worried about is that a similar thing could happen in the Aleutians, that you have a this relatively small shock, this blast, which triggers an earthquake, which builds up. Now, I personally think the possibility is very remote that anything will happen, but we are dealing in an area which we have relatively little experience. Now, you may ask, well, why did the United States choose Amchitka for this?
Right.
Well, the answer to this is very simple. That they are getting to the size of blast, that they're antagonizing the citizens of the continental United States because they can cause direct damage due to the shaking. Now, where can the United States set off a blast? Well, if you look around, they have very little room for maneuvering here. And it turns out only two possible sites. One is in the Cape Beaufort region in northwest Alaska, and secondly is Amchitka. Now, from a seismologist's viewpoint, not speaking as an environmentalist, but as a seismologist's viewpoint, Cape Beaufort would be very much preferable because there would be no danger of tsunamis, this type of thing.
So why don't they go there?
It would be very expensive. Amchitka was a base during the war. It would be an airfield, deep sea, and so on. But I think that maybe our friends here may have something about environmental effects of Cape Beaufort, which might be much greater. I'm not prepared to comment on this. But it was cheap, but it does have some possibility of earthquake damage. Now, the next thing you may say is, well, didn't they ask their advisors? There was a panel set up by the President's Science Advisory Committee. This report has never been released. However, several members on the committee have commented, and it appears that they weren't completely enthusiastic about this site.
I wonder if they were not.
Now, I think their attitude, from what I can read, is somewhat similar to my own, that we don't feel that there's a great deal of danger. However, we would prefer that you do it in a safer place if you must do it. And this I am not prepared to comment. But what I'm commenting on, given that you must set it off, well, here is my feeling. And so my personal feeling is that if you must set it off, I prefer you not do it here, but I am not panicking on the issue at all.
But you said such things as, I've been making notes as you talked along. There is a chance, slight danger. Our state of knowledge is meager, limited knowledge, little experience. And all these things, I'm not trying to roll you in an argument or discussion, but just sitting here, well, Irving, Jim, how do you feel about what Dr. Ellis has told us? Jim?
Well, I don't want to interject into Dr. Ellis's area of competency, but I do feel that I'm a research scientist myself, and I know that in my own field, I am a little bit conservative, shall we say, in relation to harmful effects of my particular profession. In other words, I work in the lumber and timber industry, and I'm aware that lumber companies pollute and that paper companies pollute. In fact, I work with people who are pulp mill designers and people who design pulp mill processes, and they're aware that there's pollution coming out of in their process, but they tend to minimize its effect because of the social implications upon their own work. And I do feel that way, basically, about my own work. If I were as critical about it as I should be, I should probably quit what I'm doing. But my other self, my other interests are imposed upon them. So therefore, I think that the proper people to make the decisions in any of these situations are not the so-called experts, but the public at large, the people who are the ones who will ultimately be most directly affected. I believe in the body politic. And I think all of our political institutions, democracy, social democracy, is supposed to be representative of people's, of collective of people's opinions. But these opinions have not been forthcoming in relationship to the whole nuclear arms question. And the reason for it is that it's all done under the shroud of national security, a shibboleth under which the Atomic Energy Commission has been getting away, possibly with murder, for the last 20 and 30 years.
Well, Dr. Ellis mentioned this report that was put together and then suddenly was never released. And you say that people on this commission, outside of the governor, if you like, have spoken about the fact that they were not in favor of blasting Amchitka. But why have they, for example, hushed up the report to the president? Why has it not been made public? This kind of thing.
Well, the statement is that it would not have been made by a member of the committee, is that it would not have been all difficult to edit the classified information out and publish it. Now, I don't know. That it hasn't. I suspect that there really isn't a great deal there that we don't already know. But it's a self-interest group.
Jim, all along, the attitude of the Don't Make a Wave Committee has been that this is a totally irresponsible process that the Atomic Energy Commission is engaging in. We have taken the position that the Atomic Energy Commission can't even predict what will happen, let alone the extent of the damage. We have said this in our writings, in our public appearances. We are not scaremongers, but we feel that the protection of Canadian health and life and our very survival should not be at the mercy of this nuclear brinkmanship. This has recently been underlined and capitalized by the appearance in Vancouver at the invitation of the Don't Make a Wave Committee of an outstanding nuclear physicist and medical biologist, Dr. John Goffman, whose research at one time was even helpful in producing the original atomic bombs. He was interviewed widely by the media when he was here in Vancouver, where he spoke at the QE Playhouse. I have before me a clipping from The Province in which he is quoted as follows. "How can they be so arrogant as to say they know what the effects will be?" Goffman asked in an interview in Vancouver. "They cannot know what will happen until after the test. They do not know if there will be a radiation leak or an earthquake." Now, Jim, if you go back and study the record of the Atomic Energy Commission, I think the most modest thing you can say about it is that it has not, in fact, been reliable. The credibility gap has widened. When they started their testing in Nevada, they assured the public that there would, of course, be no radiation leaks. Only recently, just a few months ago, there was such a serious radiation leak that an 8,000-foot cloud emerged from a, quote, minor blast, which drifted almost 1,000 miles into neighboring states. The original test at Amchitka in 1965, which was kept highly secret from the public, actually leaked radioactivity. We know on the basis of tests which were made by a concern hired by the AEC, Teledyne Isotopes, that radioactivity is a very dangerous process occurring with regard to the island of Amchitka. For 66 years, it is predicted that there can be a release of radiation beyond so-called maximum permissible limits. We are not scaremongers. We are responsible people who want to preserve and protect our environment, and our attitude is under no circumstances should any government body or any industry tamper with the health, the lives of our citizens, our property, our recreational areas, our very survival, when literally they don't know what the hell they're doing. And I say this is a responsible statement.
Yeah. I'd like to ask Dr. Ellis a question relating to earthquakes. The recent Los Angeles earthquake did extensive damage in Los Angeles. And I would like to know what Dr. Ellis has to say about the fact that the Las Vegas, Nevada atomic energy test grounds are just a few hundred miles away from Los Angeles. And is there any even remote possibility that the continued testing of atomic bombs under the Nevada desert could possibly have had anything to do with the Los Angeles earthquake?
Right, good question, Dr. Ellis.
Well, I think the far as I can see, the answer is no. Now, it's one of these questions which you cannot say absolutely no. However, let me point out that due to the processes which are going on in the Earth, there have been and are going to be earthquakes in the California, and the question is, when you trigger them, are you going to trigger larger ones or smaller ones? This is the question, really, that must be answered. And so far, we've only been triggering smaller ones. So, I would say no to your question, but like most scientists, I'll waffle some on this.
You say, not your exact words, but I can't say absolutely.
Well, I can't say absolutely, but I would say coming back to one comment of Irving, I would disagree with Irving that the first Amchitka test in 1965, Longshot, was highly secretive. I'm just looking through my folder here, and I guess last night, before I pulled it out, I threw away a press release for the 1965 shot. I was personally involved in recordings from this, and I did the research on that shot at that time, and I think that it was announced, but this was really in a period before many people really became overly concerned about the environment. So I would dispute this, but...
Is it registered, Doctor?
Oh, yes, so we recorded it. In fact, there were something like 10 stations out in British Columbia, and the University of BC actually had one station which we operated in Williams Lake. No, it was recorded all over North America.
What kind of reading would you get?
Well, it was equivalent to a magnitude 6 earthquake, the first shot. So we have now moved up with Canican to a magnitude 7, but it was very small. It was an 80 kilotons rather than a 5 megaton that we're dealing with here. But it was certainly recordable all over North America, and as I say, we did do research on it.
Wait, when you say 6, is it 6 on the scale of the Richter scale?
It is a magnitude scale, which is approximately the Richter scale, yes.
Right. So to put that in perspective, you tell me 6, that doesn't mean too much to me unless you tell me that the recent earthquake in California registered what?
Well, just back to Longshot was the 80 kiloton event in 1965 was magnitude 6. The Mill Roll was about magnitude 6.6, and Los Angeles earthquake was about magnitude 6.5. So the Mill Roll and Los Angeles were about the same size in the first arrivals from the shot.
What you're telling me is that the upcoming Amchitka blast in October, it certainly was powerful. We ever detonated. And we could be looking at what on the scale?
About magnitude 7. Now, let me put this in perspective. To most scientists, this is not a particularly frightening thing, because if we look at the historical record, we find that each year in the world there are 2 events in excess of magnitude 8, and approximately 20 events, seismic events, in excess of magnitude 7. Now, most of these occur in remote areas of the world where we hear nothing about them. And many of these occur underneath the sea where tsunamis might occur. So this is not a particularly frightening event to a seismologist. In fact, this is what I study, this is how I make my living, and I'm interested in these. And so maybe in some sense I'm a bit callous, but these do occur, and what we're trying to do is prevent them causing damage. Now, one thing that has been done is that there's a tsunami warning system on the Pacific. Now, in 1946, there was a shock in the Aleutians, but much closer to mainland Alaska than the present one, which killed a significant number of people in Hawaii. It caused about a 20-foot wave in Hawaii. At this time, the United States set up a tsunami warning system. Now, just let me say a bit about this in relation to the 1963 Chilean event. When the 1963 Chilean event occurred, it was immediately located due to the seismic shock, which reverberated around the world. And so they said, look, this is underwater, it may be a problem. And then they started interrogating their tide gauges, this type of thing, and they immediately saw that a tsunami had started. So people in Hawaii were warned, and they had something like 8 hours warning. And what they did was clear out all the people from the beach areas that they could warn them, they were patrolled. The wave hit Hawaii, and a lot of damage resulted. They thought everything was fine. But really, when they went back in the damaged area, they found a lot of people had not moved out because, there's no real cause for concern. And something the same hit Japan. But there is a tsunami warning system on the Pacific. And that if a tsunami should be generated at Amchitka, that this warning system would give the BC coast probably several hours warning. Now, so at least you should minimize the loss of life. But let me say a few more words. That there's no guarantee that if a earthquake should occur, and let me stress that I believe that the probability of this is extremely small, that it would occur immediately at the time of an earthquake. Our experience at the Nevada test site shows that earthquakes go on up to several weeks after the blast itself. Now, as I said, in the Nevada test site, these shocks are relatively small.
Mm-hmm.
And let me again stress that I believe that the possibility is remote. But there is a tsunami warning system. Of course, if this happened in the middle of the night, well, then it might create chaos. But again, also let me come back to the BC coast. The calculations have been done, and due to the nature of our BC coast, and the coast of North America in general, it appears as if we would not have a damaging tsunami along the coast north of BC, even though a tsunami was set off from this region. It depends on the shape of your coastline relative to the location of the source of your tsunami, and the shape of your inlets. And this problem has been looked at, and it does not appear to be a particular problem. Now, this does not say what would happen in other places, but at least it says that in this area, at least, we shouldn't panic. But this is not to say there shouldn't be cause for concern in other places.
All right, we must wait for a moment. Our number here, I haven't given a number, 731-9201. We mentioned Dr. John Goffman having been in town. He's certainly one of the most formidable men in this field, and he will be on the long distance line, hopefully. He's back in California this morning, but was contacted when he was here and said yes, he would come to the telephone from his lab or wherever he is, and hopefully we'll be talking to him around 10 o'clock, I think. I'm, as always, guilty of asking all the questions. I remember if you would like to join in discussion this morning with Dr. Robert Ellis, Jim Baldwin, and Irving Stowe, 731-9201. Irving, you were trying to get in, jumping, so please go ahead now.
Yes, with regard to my statement that the 1965 earthquake, the 1965 atomic testing, rather, at Amchitka was highly secret, I was not, of course, referring to being able to keep it secret from seismologists. Of course, it could be monitored. reflected on the seismographs. What I was referring to was the highly secret way the documents with regard to that test were handled by the AEC. My authority for this is the 1971 issue of Center Magazine, which is the publication for the Center for Democratic Institutions. The article is entitled Atomic Double Talk by Gene Schrader. And in that article, it stated specifically that the reports of the radioactivity that leaked out in Amchitka in 1965 were kept, in fact, highly secret, and it wasn't until concerned congressional people began to question the AEC that this information finally came out, that there was, in fact, leaks of radiation from that test. Now, this, of course, has been a consistent pattern. The AEC all along has been wrong and has misinformed the public about the effects of its atomic testing. Earlier in this discussion, mention was made of why did they pick Amchitka. I think it's a truism to point out that, of course, they could not continue this major testing in the state of Nevada because it would cause such political repercussions and such political pressure from people like Howard Hughes with his multi-million-dollar investments. The real question is, of course, if they continue on this insane course, why did they pick Amchitka instead of the northern slopes of Alaska? And I don't think that I am being unduly alarmist if I simply point out the fact that with $900 million invested in oil leases in Alaska, the AEC was far less likely to take any chances of disturbing American economic investments in oil than doing their testing on the wildlife reserve on Amchitka near a major earthquake fault.
What about the other location, Jim, Dr. Ellis mentioned? Cape? Cape Beaufort, which is in northwest Alaska. I think it has to be fair to Americans here that it is a considerable distance from the North Slope oil find, and while there certainly was activity going on the North Slope at the time when they started looking at these sites, I think this was before the find was made. But nevertheless, I think I'll agree with Irving on most of his points here. I just might raise one other point, and this, come back to it, and this is to point out the fact that this blast might actually be, from a seismic viewpoint, might actually be beneficial. That, as I point out, that there is going to be energy release and earthquakes from Amchitka. It's only a question of whether they're going to be large or small. Now, if we can set off charges and release this energy in small amounts, well, then we're going to be better off. There's far less chance of having a very large event. So, the evidence so far is you do let off small events. The concern is that you might let off a large one.
And this, we don't know.
We don't know, but the evidence so far is we let off small ones. So, so far the evidence is that it is, in a sense, beneficial from a seismic viewpoint. The concern is that it might not be.
Right. Go ahead, Jimmy, you were trying to jump in there.
Yeah.
From a seismic point of view, he states. I'm writing all this down because when we get back to Gotham, I've got to raise this point.
Well, what concerns me here is the very narrow view scientists are taking. Dr. Ellis mentions this from a scientific point of view, from his area of expertise, and I respect that. However, one of the things that's been going on is that we have developed a technology credibility gap, and this has happened within the last 2 or 3 years. And one example of the technology credibility gap is the use of DDT. I remember when DDT was being criticized initially by Rachel Carson when she wrote her book, Silent Spring. She was practically ridiculed. If she had been a practicing scientist, she probably would have been read out of the scientific establishment which she represented. And I feel that, of course, DDT is something that we know nothing about the long-term life of at that particular time. We didn't know that it persisted in the environment for up to 20 years. And as a matter of fact, we still don't know whether DDT will indeed wipe all of us out because of its ability to its persistency in the environment and the way it ends up in food chains. And I fear that well, you know the old story about the people who sat down to design animals. You know, all the animals look pretty good, but when they decided that a better way to do it was to get a committee. So they got a committee of experts together, one on the bones, another on skin, another on flesh, and they all sat down together and they came up with a camel. And they said, you know, that the camel was an animal that was designed by a committee. But, and I served on many, many committees, and we designed many, many camels. Now, there are people who take a overall environmental point of view, and one of them I'd like to mention is Dave Brower, who was the controversial president of the Sierra Club, and who is now founder of a new organization called Friends of the Earth. And he takes the attitude in saying that if you use a biblical analogy, that the earth was created, mankind appeared on the earth 4 days ago. Technology appeared on the scene 1/40th of a second ago. And that is the time scale and the time perspective in which we are viewing events which are taking place today. He says, and I agree, that we have to call a halt to the onrush of technological advancement, so-called. And the only way that we can, so that we get a perspective of what we have been doing. And therefore, I urge every person who I can contact to do whatever they can to prevent this test from occurring on Amchitka Island. It is a focal point not only of nuclear events, which pose long-term dangers and possible immediate dangers to us, but it is a focal point for all rampant, shall we say, technology. And I think that's what's wrong with the whole situation as it exists now today. It's not just the United States. It's the Soviet Union. It's China. It's Britain. It's France. It's all countries who are technologically and are advanced and who are not considering at all the overall effects upon this very fragile planet on which we live.
Dr. Ellis, as a seismologist, does it not disturb you? Okay, you say that from a seismic point of view, there could be a beneficial effect to this Amchitka blast, but what about the things that Irving is concerned about? The fallout, for example, which, you know, as a human being, forget the fact that you're a seismologist. Does this not disturb you?
Yes, I think our points of view are slightly different. But I think these things do concern me. I would certainly like to see an end to the arms race and a nuclear testing. I agree completely to this point. However, and I don't really want to get into this side of the argument, but all I am willing to say is that I don't feel I'm in a position to judge whether this testing should be, I'd like to see the testing stop right now. I'd like to see it stopped 10 years ago. But from the practical viewpoint, I don't know whether the United States can stop testing now or after Canada or when, but I would certainly like to see it stop. I do have concern again about the leakage, this type of problem. I think that there have been a lot of leaks in the Nevada test site. There have about 20 shots out of 200 Nevada test site have leaked radiation. Only four out of these 200 which they actually intended to completely contain have leaked, and so this is a fairly good record, but at the same time I am disturbed that they have actually, in a sense, intentionally let about 16 leak. No, I'd like to see an end of the testing completely. I agree with you completely there, and I'm concerned, but I don't consider I have expertise in this area, that I am talking here completely as an amateur.
Right, but you see, perhaps we would all look at it in a different light if somebody, a leading seismologist perhaps in California, went to the United States government and said, look, we believe that if we generated so-and-so underground in Antarctica, we could possibly alleviate earthquakes for all time on the west coast of the North American continent. We don't know, but our experience tells us this, this, and this, and this, and we're prepared to drill holes and detonate this, and we feel that we can take pressure off the San Andreas Fault or whatever. And perhaps then people like Irving Stone and Jim Bolin and Jim McDonald could buy it. But strictly from a military point of view, we seem to be rushing headlong down a road that we know absolutely nothing about for what ends. You know, I forget the fact that you're a seismologist. I think you've answered my question, really.
No, I'm concerned, and one of my concerns is that I'm not sure that anybody outside the U.S. military is in a position to make the decision whether this test is necessary. And it is a self-interest group. And we all know we serve on committees and we look after our own bailiwick. This is one of the basic premises in our society, that everybody works to best reserve an organization. And I don't think it's necessarily a very good premise. But this is the way the system works. And I have got concern here. Whether there's a proper checks and balances in the system is certainly a concern. But when it comes down to talking about I can read the draft statement mechanic and released by the Atomic Energy Commission, and things seem to make general sense. Certainly, I'm concerned, and I would like to see the testing stop. But all I can really say from any point of view as an expert, with any degree of expertise, is that from a seismic viewpoint, I think the danger is relatively small and might actually be beneficial. But to the person who argues that there's absolutely no chance of anything happening and that it is certainly beneficial, I would say, well, then you certainly go and set off the blast next to San Andreas in the San Francisco region if it's going to be beneficial. The point that I'm making is that we do not have enough information at the present time. And we may well, within 5 years, be setting off blasts along the San Andreas Fault. But at the present time, we do not have the information available. And this is all I'm saying.
Right, Jim.
It doesn't look as though we are going to get that information either. I know two other men who are experts in the field of marine biology. I'm not an expert in the field of marine biology, or the other fellows were. Examined the draft statement mechanic. And as a result of the examination, we asked several questions of the Atomic Energy Commission in Las Vegas in a direct manner. We wrote them a letter on the stationary of the Don't Make a Wave Committee. And the question that we asked was relative to a skin diver who, about 4 months after the Millrail explosion, noticed a separation of the sea, the bottom of the sea, that hadn't been there before. It was a slight elevation difference, a little cliff that was about 14 to 16 inches high. And they said in the mechanic statement that this would be looked into, and a further report would be coming forth. So we looked for this report, and we have sent numerous letters to the Atomic Energy Commission requesting it, and we've had no answer. So what it seems to me is that we don't have sufficient information, and we're not going to get it when we ask the wrong questions.
Right. Questions are going to be disturbing to them.
Think so.
Right.
Jim, I find it profoundly disturbing that a seismologist should take the point of view that there can be beneficial effects from underground nuclear tests. One might as well say, well, let's start using nuclear bomb testing underground all over the world to stop earthquakes. And I think I must, on my own point of view, characterize this as exceedingly short-sighted and naive. And I say this in the light of the fact that, number one, Dr. Goffman, an outstanding nuclear physicist who has been, in a sense, originally responsible for some of our current nuclear dilemma and nuclear insanity, has now arrived at the point where he realizes that this proliferation of radioactivity from nuclear explosions and nuclear reactors literally threatens us with survival. Now, when you begin to consider the fact that these are not so-called Operation Plowshares that they're conducting in Antarctica, these are not tests to try and see whether they can blast canals or get oil and gas from underground reserves, which Dr. Goffman has characterized as completely impossible because of the radiation that's released. When you consider that they are not dropping sandwiches down those holes in Antarctica, but they are detonating major missile components of the ABM and MIRV missile systems, which incidentally are programmed if used to explode over Canada, then I would think that a scientist owes a responsibility to use his expertise in every possible way to decry the use of atomic explosions and not talk about their beneficial applications. Dr. Goffman has said there are no beneficial applications from nuclear testing. In fact, the exact reverse is true.
He's really tossed you the ball, Dr. Ross.
Well, I haven't, quite frankly, done my homework on beneficial effects, but I think that a point I would make, that almost everything we do in our society, there's some effect on the environment. And when I step out of this room and go to the building and step into a car, this is going to have some damaging effect on the environment. And what we do in our life, and if we're to do anything in our life, we damage the environment in some effect. And what we're doing is weighing off the benefits versus the disadvantages. And I think the point is that Irving Stoll believes that the disadvantages of setting off a nuclear test far outweigh the advantages. And I am not willing to comment on this effect because I don't have all the facts and figures. But this we do all the time. And he believes very strongly that the disadvantages far outweigh. I'm saying I don't know. But I think this is where the...
I'm saying I don't know either, but when I sit and talk to a seismologist at 9 o'clock on a Monday morning, a beautiful Monday morning, and he tells me that our state of knowledge is meager at best, our state of knowledge is limited, we have little experience, it would seem that it's just sheer madness to keep going along in this vein.
Well, I think you're stepping into a lot of my qualifying statements. Our state of knowledge is not completely zero by any means. There have been some 200 tests on the Nevada test site. We have experience from there. We have some experience from the Antarctica region. I think that all evidence from the seismic viewpoint so far indicates that it's okay, but I would prefer that they not do it.
I don't want to get into a squabble at this point. I'd just like to quote from a newspaper account of an interview of you, Dr. Ellis, by Mike Graham. The last paragraph says, "Fears that an atomic explosion could trigger an earthquake are genuine," he said, "because there still is not enough evidence accumulated to ensure that it would not." And that seems to me directly contradictory to a statement you just made, that as far as you can see, no untoward effects are going to be produced by this explosion. And what I have to say, and say again, I will repeat basically the expertise of the leading man I know in the field of nuclear radiation when he says, the Atomic Energy Commission does not know. He does not know. No one knows what is going to be produced by a 7-point Richter scale explosion of a 5-megaton bomb on an island located just off a major earthquake fault. Now, I suggest
that even if this were a so-called test to determine whether you could blast a canal, it would not be justified in the light of Dr. Goffman's testimony that the nuclear testing holds no beneficial consequences to humanity, but in fact threatens us with our very survival. And that when we are faced with a lack of knowledge, on the one hand, and we know that it is a military application which threatens our very survival, I say that scientists, it's time that scientists stood up and became responsible with their expertise and not took a narrow and parochial view of it.
Several comments. The implication is that all military things are bad. I don't necessarily agree. I do agree in the broad sense, but I think that I would have supported, if I had been old enough to make any comment, to support, I would have supported the Allies in the Second World War. And so I disagree with the implication that all military things are bad, in a sense. I don't like things military per se, but I think that there may be times when you have to resort to this, so I don't think you can wipe them off completely. Now, the other thing is that I cannot guarantee that an earthquake will not occur. I'll agree completely here. I think the probability is very small. Likewise, I think the probability is that no one can guarantee that I'm going to get from this radio studio back to the University of British Columbia alive. But I think the probability is very high that I'm going to get back to my office alive. And this is what life is like. It's a matter of probabilities, and I think that the probability of an earthquake is very small, in the same way that the probability that I'm going to get killed on the way back to my office is very small. There's a chance that some chances you have to take, but the question is whether you must take this chance or not.
Right. I just want to get this to Dr. Ellis. I know that you have to leave us shortly, and I want to know from a seismologist's point of view now, what's going on? Can you get the phone right? What's going on at, what are the Russians doing? You know, it's like the Americans were visiting us here, and, what is your Richter scale, whatever the hell you've got out there? Are the Russians doing anything? Are the Chinese doing anything? I mean, I'm very concerned about what the Americans are doing, and I'm trying to do my bit to try and get this thing shut off. But you have access to information that I would never hear about. Are the Russians doing things that we don't know about? Are the Chinese doing things that are registering on a little scale?
I don't really know much more than you see in the paper, but in this type of thing, but certainly the Russians are testing, and the Chinese are testing, and worse from this viewpoint are the Chinese, and most of the tests are above ground, where the radiation is being released to the atmosphere and is contaminating our planet. The Russian tests, of course, they have signed the Underground Test Ban Treaty, and so they are committed not to let radiation proceed from the national territory. However, as we read in the newspaper about 10 days ago, Sweden has pointed out that very recently they had a test which leaked considerable radiation, which was recorded in Sweden.
Right.
So I think the point is well made that the U.S. is doing these things which we may not like, but there's other nations doing the same thing. This is not justified by any means. As I said, I would like to see all nuclear testing stopped.
Right. Dr. Ellis mentioned something that really concerns me in relation to scientific experimentation. There was a time when we could work in our laboratory and we performed all sorts of experiments, and if the experiment didn't work, we shrugged our shoulders and say, well, back to the drawing board.
What about the
next one? And go on to something else. Now, the same scientific curiosity and scientific approach, as you call it, which was developed back in the time of, Isaac Newton, back in the early 1800s, has the same thinking that now exists in 1971. The only difference being that the consequence of an experiment that doesn't work may be such that there is no possibility to go back to the laboratory and put it back together again and try another experiment. And I think this is really illustrated, most graphically to me, when, after the astronaut came back from the moon, an atomic physicist from Oak Ridge thought it would be a great idea to put an atomic bomb on the moon and to set it off and to measure the, was it seismic effects? I really don't know, but yeah, something like that, the deflection. And the public outcry was so loud that he immediately backed off the thing. And the fact that a highly educated, intelligent man, this scientist must be, could even conceive of this, isolated from his ordinary life, came as a bit of a shock. And I think that's probably one of the problems with some of the scientific people.
I would agree completely with Jim that we can't stay in our little cubby holes, that we must consider the effects of our experiments on society as a whole. I think that this the mechanisms by which this are going to be done, I think are still open to debate, but I would agree completely that we can't sit, and I can't say, well, I'm a seismologist, and that this is okay seismology, therefore we can go ahead. I agree completely in this area with this statement.
Let's see, I think we've got good morning. Thank you, good morning, sir. Go ahead.
Well, I'd like to talk to the gentleman that was so strong arguing against this seismologist, saying that he questioned his right to even indicate that there would be no problem because of the blast.
You want to talk with Irving Stowe, Irving?
Yeah,
Irving
Stowe,
yeah. Go ahead, Irving.
Hello.
Yes, here I am.
Well, I suggest that
feel quite to the contrary. We feel that we are very conservative people. We are trying to preserve health and lives and our environment. And really, it's quite funny that for the first time in history, people who are threatening our health, our lives, and literally the very survival of the human species should call themselves conservatives. We rather think that people who are threatening Canadian health and lives, we're supposed to be, for example, in a mutual defense partnership with the USA, and here the USA is doing things which literally threaten our very survival. These people are really the dangerous, kooky, freaky radicals, and we are not to be put in that class. That's the first comment I'd like to make.
Okay, well,
the second question you asked, sir, was about the fact that I am questioning the expertise of scientists. Now, I am not questioning the expertise of scientists. What I am saying is, the expertise must be put at the service of health and human life and survival and humanity, that we can no longer, and Jim Bowen has underlined this, we can no longer afford the luxury of pure scientific opinion which is divorced from the effects of the application of that technology.
All right, thank you. Now, what I want to know is, you said over and over that the USA is doing this and doing this and doing this atomically, when it's just been told to you, and you know it, of course, anyway, that it's not only the USA, there are a tremendous amount of other nations having atomic blasts, with just maybe even worse effects. And I think that this neutralizer, to my mind, waters down the sincerity of your effort, is that I've seen that no demonstrations in the Chinese embassy in this country. Now, what are you doing about these open-air blasts that they're having?
I'm very glad
you're... I'm very glad
that you raised that point.
point, sir, because it's quite obviously true that you have not been in touch with the public statements and the repeated public statements on television, on radio, and in the newspapers that the Don't Make a Wave Committee is sending the Greenpeace to Enchitka as a protest not only against this blast which threatens Canada, but against all atomic testing by any nation anywhere. We are just as much concerned by atmospheric testing by the People's Republic of China, by underground testing by the USSR, by atmospheric testing by France, and this is part of a concerted, responsible protest to stop the kind of nuclear insanity which threatens all human life on this planet. We are not anti-USA, except in the sense that this blast is a very immediate threat to us here in Canada. We are concerned about all atomic testing, and if we were able to speak Russian or Chinese, perhaps we would be able to go there and do something about it. But we feel our most responsible protest can be made to our government, so it will bring pressure to bear against the USA to stop this nuclear proliferation, and if that is accomplished, other governments will feel the pressure is off them to try and match this nuclear holocaust race which will wipe us all out of existence.
Yeah, well, I can't seem to keep up here. Get as much time to talk as you are, but as far as sending the Greenpeace up to Enchitka, you know, I know everybody knows that their lives will be saved by the rescue flight of American Navy, which will arrest them and shepherd them out of the danger area and take them somewhere safe, and then having made the theatrical gesture, they will come home again, and they obviously aren't going to stay over the repeat from the atomic blast, and they're not going to perish up there because the Americans will see that they don't. And it'll just be one more,
let me ask you that, okay, I'll give you a chance to answer there, but I would rather perhaps sit here and name call at each other, which it seems we might be reducing the whole thing to. How do you feel as a person about Enchitka and what the Americans are proposing up there? Do you really not care?
Oh, yeah, I care, but I think
release radioactive tritium to the ocean. Now, and it will be persist. They will continue to issue forth that radioactive tritium for 66 years. Now, that radioactive tritium will find its way to the west coast of Canada and Alaska. Now, that is a fact. Now, what the Chinese are doing by exploding their bombs high in the atmosphere somewhere over the northern part of China is also a great danger to us. It gets into the atmosphere and it's carried on the prevailing winds that go from the west to the east. And the fallout would be measured here in British Columbia at our fallout measuring zones. And I haven't heard any hue and cry about that. However, the latest U.S. test in Los Angeles, which was, I think, a little short of one megaton, vented sufficient radioactivity into the air so that it was measurable in Toronto and the Maritimes.
Right.
Now, those are dangers to Canadians.
No, you say you haven't heard any hue and cry about radioactive rain? My God, we've been measuring it and melting over the radio for years. The rain that was drifting over from China. And that's the thing that stuns me always, is that how come major atomic moves can be made by Eastern powers, and there's never so much as a sign made or demonstration in all the signs that went on the last few days. There hasn't been one suggesting that some of these other nations also cut down their atomic efforts.
Well, I think it's been standard procedure for instance, the French are planning a series of in-the-air atomic blasts sometime next fall, I believe, in the Micronesian islands. And that's horrendous. And I don't know whether you're aware of that, sir, but there is a very large contingent of uptight French nuclear scientists.
What would you people be doing about it?
Well, we'll do everything we can.
Well, I'll be pleased to see it. I have seen no sign of it yet.
As a matter of fact, the Greenpeace, we hope, is just one of many. Which will appear.
Jim, how do you expect to achieve, though, really? I think he's raised a valid question. Right, what do you really hope to achieve by sailing into the jaws of the bomb, if you like?
Well, what we hope to achieve is first of all, to get worldwide opinion stimulated against atomic testing, atomic weapons, atomic everything.
Well, it would come as a terrible shock to you if the Americans didn't arrest you and they let you sail on, because you wouldn't come back to tell us about it.
Well, I want to tell you something, sir. The all the people who have signed on to the Greenpeace have seen the movie Dr. Strangelove.
Oh, yeah.
And we are also of the opinion that there is a danger. That somehow something could happen, that our level of protest will not be appreciated, and that certain people in the U.S. Military would like to see us at the bottom of the ocean. That is a distinct possibility,
There's no chance of anything,
they
won't let you get hurt.
There's
no danger of that.
Well, are you a military man from the U.S.?
Well, I absolutely certainly won't, but you're obviously not going to commit suicide. You haven't got a boatload of suicides there, have you?
A boatload of what? Suicides. Now, we have a boatload of people who are putting their jeans where their mouth is.
No, you're not, because you've never failed, but they always arrest these fascist boats and send them back again.
I think it's time to put this whole matter into historical perspective. When the USA was testing hydrogen bombs in the continental USA, and not letting the public know... I don't like to cut you off, but I believe we've got Dr. Gossman on the line.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling. All right, I'm sorry, we'll go back to it. Well, I guess we haven't. What's happened there? You're listening to Open Mind on CKVM. We're trying to get through to Dr. John Gossman, a gentleman that Irving has referred to many times in the first hour of the program this morning. I would invite calls and comments here at 731-9201. Dr. Robert Ellis sadly had to leave, a seismologist from UBC, perhaps. I was surprised that more people didn't pick up on some of the things he was saying. Perhaps nobody's out there, nobody cares, nobody's listening. I often get that feeling sometimes. 731-9201, let's break for a moment. Back we go to the air, and as promised, we're talking with Dr. John Gossman. Doctor, it's sometimes interesting to start off a conversation by having guests describe themselves. You know, it's one thing for me to sit here and say I'm talking to one of the top nuclear scientists in the world, employed by the U.S. Atomic Energy Commission one time. How do you describe yourself today?
I'm a physician and nuclear physical chemist. I've worked on nuclear energy since the time before there was a Manhattan Project or an atom bomb project. Did my PhD work on the discovery of uranium-233 and its slow and fast neutron fission ability, and uranium-233 is, as the audience may know, one of the three substances that can be used to generate atomic power. I did that work in collaboration with Dr. Seaborg in the early 40s, and since that time I've maintained my interest in radiation in recent years, in the last 15 years, much more particularly in the questions of radiation effects on biological systems and on humans. And in the last 8 years, I was commissioned by the Atomic Energy Commission to organize a division to study the impact of all forms of radiation in all atomic energy projects on man, and my colleague Dr. Kampman and I have recently had quite a bit to say about the fact that we believe radiation standards have been grossly too high in that they've allowed for the peaceful atom far too much radiation for humans when we consider what that amount of radiation will do ultimately in the form of extra deaths from cancer, leukemia, and genetic disorders. Now one has to separate what's allowed from what has happened up to this point. Our point is that it shouldn't be allowed, and that the people who are involved in peaceful and military nuclear activities need to know that it shouldn't be allowed, because they've been living under the delusion that a certain amount of radiation will be without harm, and this is absolutely false. There is no amount of radiation without harm.
What about Amchitka and radiation?
Amchitka represents an unknown. Here we have a proposal to fire off a blast of several times the largest underground test that this country has conducted in an area of known seismicity, and with the fact that the Atomic Energy Commission hasn't guessed too well about the leakage from tests before at Nevada, I think for an unknown size blast, for a blast where there's no previous experience, whether or not all the radioactivity from that blast will be contained in the cavity, no one knows. And if it isn't contained, we may have quite a contamination of marine life in the general area there, and of course that can spread via the marine life. That's one possible situation. It's not going to contaminate the earth irreversibly at all, but it's one more of many ways of adding contamination to our oceans and our biosphere, and that, among many, many other reasons, is one reason why the Amchitka test should not be conducted.
Dr. Gothman, we were hoping, we had a Dr. Robert Ellis, he's a seismologist at the University of British Columbia here. He had to get back to campus, but he was with us for an hour this morning. And among other things, he said he believed that this blast could have, when he was speaking from a seismic point of view, quote, it could have a beneficial effect up there in Amchitka to touch off this blast.
Well, I hear that people like Dr. Ellis and others have suggested the beneficial effect might be to relieve the stress.
Among others?
Well, I consider my general opinion on that is that in a field where we have practically zero knowledge, including Dr. Ellis in spite of his expertise in seismology, in a field where we have practically zero knowledge, I consider stating that this might have beneficial effects as an arrogance of the highest order among scientists that is to be extremely condemned, because with what little we know, to start predicting beneficial effects in experiments that we conduct upon nature is one of the things that people should be duly skeptical of scientists and their judgment about.
Dr. Gothman, I mentioned this once this morning, but I want to bring it up and get your comment. On Friday, we sat here and had a rather lighthearted morning with a musical group from the United States, five young people, who sing about war and peace, pollution, ecology, this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was amazed to discover, we got talking about what we were doing today, and there was only one of the five, a young girl, that had heard anything about Amchitka. The other four were in complete ignorance of what the United States is planning to do in October up there on that little island.
I think you've touched on an extremely important point. You're absolutely right that you will find people who are ostensibly concerned about ecology and pollution and related matters and peace, and yet they are ignorant. What we have to say about that is this. The reason for that ignorance must be looked for, and the reason is we have a fantastic public relations propaganda barrage emanating out of our Atomic Energy Commission and Department of Defense, and the whole purpose of that barrage is always to play down any of the problems associated with underground testing or with a peaceful atom, and there is practically no presentation on the other side. The money is all on the side of promoting all these things, and so what one gets is a public relations whitewash sponsored by the U.S. government with no presentation on the other side, and it therefore is not surprising that anybody who even is very interested has great difficulty of coming by much information. They don't even know what's going on, nor do they know the sources of the information. And while the Atomic Energy Commission doesn't keep any of this secret, they make no effort to present the other side of the question or the fact that somebody is or should be concerned.
Right. Jim Boland wanted to speak to you, Jim.
I'd like to ask you a question, Doctor.
Yes.
Several people have taken the position that the proposed voyage of the Greenpeace to Amchitka is merely a theatrical stunt. And we feel that what is important about the ship going to Amchitka is that it is a focal point, hopefully for the Americans, to evolve a feeling within themselves that if the Canadians are this concerned to go to bat for this kind of a test, that we, or you rather, in the United States, would take a similar action. Do you think we have any hope of success in this regard?
Well, I think we have to hope that you're going to have success. And if somebody wishes to say that the survival of the human species represents a theatrical, let's have more theatricals, because I think all of us are interested in having the survival of the human species. And because of the fact that it's been a propaganda blackout and a brainwash that's been going on with respect to nuclear arms, nuclear testing, and so forth, I think that the action of the Greenpeace in attempting to point this out and to do something to highlight the problem and perhaps wake Americans up, I think is a marvelous effort. And perhaps it won't succeed in waking Americans and people of the world up enough and fast enough, but we most certainly have to try everything to get people to realize what the meaning is of a continued arms race, further testing, further deployments, further escalation of the stockpile and the deliverability and the computerized aspects of balanced terror as a means of attempting to preserve peace. I feel that every effort you make is important in waking people up, and I can only condemn those who would say it's theatrical, because those are the same people who are part of the brainwash operation.
Dr. Gothman, one of our callers this morning, particularly speaking to Jim and the ship Greenpeace going to Amchitka, said it is most un-American. You know, here you go again when you parade. It's anti-American. You now have a Red China embassy here. Why don't you get involved in this thing? Why don't you petition the Russians as well?
Absolutely. We should petition the Russians, the Red Chinese, and the French. This is not an American problem. America is one of them, and they're the ones that are going to conduct this test. We don't have the Russians and the Chinese conducting a test at Amchitka where Canadians may be at risk. And therefore, but absolutely, we must get the message through to the Chinese and the Russians and the French and the Americans that this sort of thing is anti-human and should cease. By all means, so we should not focus on just the Americans, but on all of them. But certainly, any one of them coming up with anything like this, we ought to focus the attention on their activities and at the same time indicate
Chapman, we have just signed a firm contract chartering the Greenpeace, and the owner of the vessel is behind us to the extent that he himself is going to be the skipper on this vessel. And when we announced this to the mass media, we pointed out specifically that we hope the Greenpeace will be the focus of an international flotilla of protest, and we hope to get in touch with conservation and anti-pollution and groups and concerned people in Hawaii, Alaska, Japan, and the USA. Do you feel that there is any possibility, from what you describe as almost a blackout with regard to atomic testing on Antarctica, that there might be a vessel from California which might join with the Greenpeace and the other vessels, fishing and otherwise, which we hope will constitute an international flotilla of protest against all atomic testing?
I just don't know what the chances will be of getting some group from America to do it. I just think it's important to continue in every possible way to highlight the problem that nuclear weapons testing and deployment is just going to lead to disaster for the Earth, and that balance of terror efforts of keeping the peace are just not the right way to go. But I would not be able to guess whether enough Californians and people in the States will wake up in time.
Let me ask you, Doctor. First of all, how much time do you have? I don't know what your schedule is. Are you? We have people calling that want to talk to you, but I had one question at the very beginning of what you started to say, and I'm paraphrasing, but you said something like, all radiation is bad.
Absolutely.
And I wondered if you could maybe particularly during the morning that it is 25 after 10, we have mothers, housewives, etc. listening, what kind of things have you uncovered in your research?
Well, our research leads to the expectation that the amount of radiation that's allowed from the peaceful atom, if everyone received it, could result in a 10% increase in our rate of induction of cancer and leukemia. This would be a public health disaster. But one of the other implications is that we must look at varieties of sources of radiation, for example, medical and dental radiation. Now, in that case, we are paying a price for medical and dental radiation, but we need some of it for the patient's sake. The point is that the medical and dental profession has been alerted that they can reduce the amount of exposure by techniques already available to them, still get the benefit of the x-rays to the patient in the way of diagnosis, and cut the danger down by 10 times. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there's any cause for panic at all. We need a use of medical x-rays, but all these things need to now be done with much more care and with much more wisdom, now that we know that even small amounts of radiation can provoke an increase in cancer, leukemia, and genetic alterations in our heredity that can be passed on.
Mm. Dr. Goffman, in view of the fact that you have stated many times publicly that even background radiation can be harmful, and that literally the future of the human race depends upon not increasing exposure continually from nuclear weapons testing and nuclear reactors for electricity, would you state your feelings about a moratorium on this kind of nuclear testing in view of the fact that you've just stated some radiation can be useful from a medical standpoint, and therefore we shouldn't pile on top of this nuclear exposure?
Absolutely, that's absolutely correct. I consider that even the lowest amount of radiation that we get from cosmic rays, from radioactivity in the Earth, and from some radioactive elements in our bodies naturally, we're paying a price in health for that. And because we know that every amount added, I agree with you completely, that every amount added will cause harm, it is a terrible stupidity on our part to allow nuclear reactors and nuclear electricity or nuclear weapons testing to use up any part of what we might call our radiation budget. It would be far more important to stop resources of nuclear pollution totally, such as nuclear weapons testing and nuclear reactor pollution or any other uses of radioactivity industry that can't be controlled. And thus, if we're going to get any radiation at all, I would much rather see it come from medical sources that might provide humans some benefit at the time they're getting the irradiation. Whereas these other sources, I believe the benefits won't match the harm they'll do.
Right.
And if we continue to pollute our planet, both by nuclear weapons testing and by nuclear energy programs, a little bit more and a little bit more, I don't think anyone can predict what the meaning will be for the survival of the human species.
Dr. Goffman, we have people calling in, and I know this one particular person is wanting to speak with you. I just hope that we have a good connection.
Right now. Yes, hello, Dr. Goffman?
Yes.
Yes, I'm wondering if you can tell me where the various nuclear powers get their radioactive minerals from.
Where the nuclear powers get them, there is uranium and thorium spread in various places throughout the world, and some places are richer than others. It depends upon how much you want to pay to refine the ore, but there are huge deposits apparently in the Soviet Union, in the Belgian Congo, in Canada, and in the United States. And I rather suspect, if you look hard, for example, in India there are huge deposits of thorium, in Brazil there are. If you look hard enough, you'll find these minerals are practically everywhere in the Earth's crust, although in some areas the concentration is higher, and therefore you can get it at a cheaper price per pound.
Yeah, I was of the impression that Canada exported some of these minerals.
I don't know how much. I'm quite sure Canada sells uranium outside of Canada, yes.
Yeah, and I thought they supplied some of it to the United States.
I just do not know how much of it of ours in the United States is coming from Canada, but Canada is one of the rich sources, and I wouldn't be surprised. I do not know the exact export.
Well, then it might be a suggestion that people who really want to protest against these various uses of nuclear devices to speak to their own government and
absolutely put a ban on any export of uranium for such uses.
Right.
Rather than protest, Doctor, if I can just interject and kind of build on what he's saying, rather than perhaps protest Antarctica, we were 5 years too late. If we had started protesting, this use of uranium, we might have solved it. And maybe this is the area that what people like Jim Boland and Irving Stowe here should be doing.
I think that's a valuable additional suggestion. The major thing is to have more people understand what we're facing and to protest in every effective manner.
You know, Doctor and caller, you'll just bear with me. It's on mornings like this, though. I don't know what it's like in California where you are, but it is a beautiful spring morning here in Vancouver.
Yeah.
And it's a difficult thing to get across to people what we are talking about. They say, oh, ho-hum, it won't happen in our time, and, this kind of thing. It's a hard thing to sell, if you like.
Yes, you see, the difficulty with people is that they're crisis-oriented. When the trouble descends on their head in a visible form that they can feel, they know they have a problem. And what our job is in education, in the whole ecological peace areas, is to try to get people to learn from our past errors that we shouldn't wait till we have irreversible damage, but use our intelligence as humans to try to keep these beautiful mornings and this earth beautiful so we'll have something we can live on 5 or 10 or 15 years from now. This difficulty that if they don't feel hurt this morning, they don't believe the problem exists, is, as you say, a major educational problem for those who wish to keep a livable, enjoyable earth habitable by humans and other species.
Dr. Goffman, would you agree that when we are talking about the perils of radiation,
radiation, we are faced with even greater dangers of alerting the public to what the danger is, because number one, radiation is invisible. It isn't like a pollution cloud over the city of Vancouver. And secondly, that once those radio particles and those radioactive lethal waste are released into the atmosphere and into the water and into the soil, they keep on emitting their poison long after some of the other pollutants may have been partially neutralized.
Yes, I agree with you completely on both counts. It's unfortunate that we can't see or smell radioactivity, because I think people would be a lot more concerned. The invisibility is a horribly treacherous deceiver. And the second point, we must absolutely remember your second point, namely, that when we pollute our earth, our air, our streams, our land, our oceans with radioactivity, the lifetime of these substances is so long, and that they will go on emitting these radiations, that we can say we have thereby created irreversible pollution of our planet forever. You know, 500 years to 20,000 years is the same as forever. And so every wrong decision we make with this invisible pollutant, radioactivity, will plague all future generations of man for a long time to come, simply because it is a form of pollution from which there is no turning back, no method of cleaning up. It is irreversible pollution forever.
Dr. Dauphin, yes. Why is it that your colleagues in the Atomic Energy Commission are not uniformly against the proliferation of anything radioactive? I know that they have the same level of awareness as you do,
yes,
but why don't they say something?
Yes, the difficulty, relates to another difficulty, and that is, unfortunately, all of science and technology is structured that the support of people in their jobs and their livelihood is such that in order to get along, you must go along. And people are not about, because the same thing as if you were telling me about it's a nice day today and why worry about it, people will not do something that might make their superiors angry with them and cause them to lose their job or their position. And therefore, you should never expect from the supporters of an enterprise that the scientists and technologists who work for that enterprise are going to criticize the enterprise in any significant manner. It's just a rare and few people that will do the criticism, and the price we pay is high in the form of reprisals against us.
Well, I kind of had that feeling about a seismologist. I don't wish to sound rude, but I had a feeling that he was kind of forced to play the game just a little bit.
Unfortunately, even though nobody puts the direct screws on you to play the game, everybody knows what the rules of the game are, and if you don't go along, you pretty soon find you're outside. And so what you have, generally, with enterprises of this sort, is a remarkable group of think-alikes, and you never have anybody say anything. Or they may privately say something to you, and they do to me, people on the inside, but they say, look, I have a mortgage on my home, I have three children, I can't afford to speak out.
Right. Doctor, let's take some more calls here. Good morning.
Obviously, you in Canada and others are concerned that it may not be as remote in view of the seismic and possible consequences of the tidal wave.
Right. Thank you for calling me.